Here's a question. When was the last time you felt genuinely confident about what slow flight is supposed to look like? Not kind of confident. Not, I think I remember my instructor saying something about this. Fully, completely certain you know exactly what the examiner is expecting, from the moment you start slowing down to the moment you clean up the airplane and climb away. I'm Pattern, and this is Traffic Pattern on Radio Hangar. Today, slow flight is getting the full treatment because in all my years of instructing, this is one of the maneuvers where I see the most confusion. Not just from students, but sometimes from instructors who trained before a significant change came through and never fully updated their mental model. Before we get into it, quick thank you to our friends at aviationsoul.com. Challenge coins for every step of the journey. First solo, private certificate, instrument rating, commercial, ATP. Every milestone you worked for, there's a coin for it. aviationsoul.com, worth a look. All right, slow flight. Let's start at the beginning because the beginning matters here. Under the old practical test standards, what pilots used to call the PTS, slow flight was taught and tested a specific way. The idea was to get the aircraft to minimum controllable airspeed, which in practice usually meant pulling back until the stall warning horn was going, and then flying right there. Horn, on wings level, power up. That was slow flight for a long time. A lot of instructors taught it that way. A lot of private pilots passed their check ride that way, and those pilots carried that definition with them for years, sometimes decades, into their flying. It became the accepted picture, and then the Federal Aviation Administration, the FAA, introduced the Airman Certification Standards. The ACS replaced the PTS, and it brought with it a different definition of what slow flight is supposed to look like. Here's the language that matters. The ACS describes slow flight as establishing and maintaining an airspeed at which any further increase in angle of attack, any increase in load factor, or any reduction in power would result in an immediate stall. And then it adds this. Without activating the stall warning. Without activating the stall warning. That's the change. That's the line that catches people who were taught, or who currently teach, under the old framework. The horn is no longer part of the demonstration. The horn going off is, under the ACS, a failure point. You have gone too slow. I want to stop here for a second, because I've had this conversation with students who came to me after failing their check ride, and they did not fail because they couldn't fly the airplane. They failed because they had been told, get the horn going and hold it there, and they did exactly what they were trained to do. That's a hard conversation to have, and it's preventable. Now, why did the ACS change this? It's not bureaucratic shuffling. There is real reasoning behind the shift. When you teach a student to find the horn and sit on it, you're teaching them to use a reactive cue. They're not thinking about angle of attack. They're not thinking about stall margin. They're waiting for a sound. And the problem is the stall warning horn is not always going to be there for you. In a banked turn, stall speed goes up. With ice accumulation on the wings, the horn might activate late or not at all. At high-density altitude, the airplane can feel mushy and unresponsive long before the warning sounds. With asymmetric loading, the whole picture shifts. The ACS version of slow flight pushes you to think in terms of margin. How close am I to the edge? And can I fly right at that edge without crossing it? Here's something I wish someone had told me early in training. Slow flight is not a fixed airspeed. It moves. It changes with weight, with bank angle, with configuration, with density altitude. What is minimum controllable airspeed on a cool morning at sea level with full fuel is not the same number on a hot August afternoon at a high-elevation airport with three passengers and a full baggage compartment. You have to develop a feel for the airplane at low speed. You can't just memorize a single number and call it done. Let's walk through this together. The way I'd walk through it with a student before their check ride. You're gonna start by clearing the area. Two 90-degree clearing turns or one 180. This is not a formality. This is not something you rush through because you want to get to the maneuver. The examiner is watching you clear the area. If you blow through it or skip it entirely, that sets a tone for the rest of the flight. Take your time. Look. Make sure you know what's around you because in slow flight, your ability to scan for traffic while managing the airplane is part of what's being evaluated. Configuration. In most training airplanes, slow flight is demonstrated with flaps at approach setting. Some examiners want to see the full flap configuration as well. So ask your designated pilot examiner ahead of time what they prefer. Your pilot's operating handbook, the POH, tells you the flap extension speeds for your specific airplane. You cannot extend flaps at cruise speed, Slow to the white arc first, then bring in the first notch. Slow a bit more, bring in the next. Power management is happening alongside all of this. And this is where the first major stumble usually happens. Students pull power to slow down. They get the flaps in, they think they're configured, and then they look at the altimeter and they're descending. Because they didn't anticipate how much power it takes to maintain altitude once the airplane is slow and draggy, flying on the backside of the power curve. In a Cessna 172, or a Piper Archer, slow flight with flaps out takes more power than most students expect. Go practice it. Know the approximate power setting you'll need to hold altitude in that configuration before you show up for a check ride. If you're flying a carbureted engine, and most trainers are, this is also the time to think about carburetor ice. A long, slow reduction in power, combined with moist air and moderate temperatures, creates the conditions for carb ice to form. Check your carb heat during the slowdown. It's a small thing, but it shows the examiner you're thinking about the whole picture, not just the maneuver in isolation. Trim. Use your trim. Slow flight performed with constant back pressure on the yoke is not good airmanship. It's fatigue waiting to happen, and it means you're compensating with muscle instead of setting the airplane up properly. Get the trim set so the airplane wants to fly there, then manage with small inputs. Now, airspeed. The ACS tolerance for slow flight is plus 10 minus 0 knots from your target. Plus 10 minus 0. You can be 10 knots above what you're targeting. You cannot be below, because below is where the horn comes in, and below is the failure. What is your target? This is a conversation to have with your instructor before the check ride. In many common training aircraft, minimum controllable airspeed without activating the stall warning runs somewhere in the range of 5 to 8 knots above the point where you'd hear the horn in the clean configuration. In the landing configuration with full flaps, that number changes. Know your airplane. Know your numbers. Know the difference in configuration. The examiner is going to ask you to make turns while in slow flight. And this is where I see the second most common failure. When you bank in slow flight, load factor increases. When load factor increases, stall speed goes up. When stall speed goes up, your margin to the stall warning shrinks. If you were sitting 5 knots above the warning in straight and level flight, a 30-degree bank turn may push you right into it. This means your bank should be shallow. The ACS tolerances are plus or minus 10 degrees of bank. 20 degrees is a solid target. It gives the examiner the turn they're asking for without dramatically increasing your load factor, and as you enter the bank, there's a natural tendency for the nose to drop. Manage the back pressure, but don't over-rotate to compensate. You're already near the edge. Coordinate with rudder. This is critical in slow flight. Adverse yaw is pronounced at low airspeed. A sloppy, uncoordinated entry will let the nose swing the wrong direction, and that uncoordinated yaw is a quick path to the stall warning or a departure from controlled flight if you're not paying attention. Ball-centered. Always. Come out of the turn. Coordinate. Level the wings. Check your altitude. Plus or minus 100 feet is the tolerance. If you've lost 100 feet in the turn, you're at the acceptable limit. More than that, and you have a problem. When the examiner asks you to transition out of slow flight, whether to a climb or back to cruise, the sequence matters. Power first, add power to stop any sink rate and start accelerating. Then retract flaps incrementally, one notch at a time, letting the airspeed respond before pulling the next notch. If you yank the flaps to full up while you're still at slow flight airspeed, you lose lift faster than you gain speed, and the airplane may mush through the altitude you've been holding so carefully. Incremental flap retraction, smooth transition. Treat the exit with the same discipline as the maneuver itself. Let me take a minute to talk about the oral exam, because slow flight will come up there too. The examiner is very likely to ask you to explain the relationship between angle of attack and stall. They may ask why slow flight is now performed without the stall warning. They may ask how load factor affects stall speed, and if you've been paying attention today, you know the answer, because we just talked about it. Be ready for those conversations. The ACS is not just a flight test, it's an airmanship test. The oral and the flight are two halves of the same evaluation. Download the ACS from FAA.gov. It's free, and read the slow flight task line by line. Read the knowledge column. Read the skill column. Then sit down with your instructor and have them ask you every question in the knowledge column out loud. That preparation will eliminate surprises. Here's what I want you to carry away from today beyond the check ride. Slow flight is the foundation of every approach and landing you will ever make. When you're on short final in the landing configuration, at approach speed, descending toward the numbers, that is slow flight. When you're in the traffic pattern and you've misjudged your energy and you need to stretch the glide, your feel for the stall margin is what keeps you out of trouble. When you're doing a soft field or short field landing and you're carrying minimum approach airspeed over the fence, you need to know that airplane at low speed intimately. The pilot who truly understands slow flight is not staring at the airspeed indicator. They're flying by feel and by sight and glancing at the instruments to confirm. The controls feel different down there, heavy. A pitch input that would be subtle at cruise is pronounced at minimum controllable airspeed. The airplane communicates differently. Learning to listen to that, not just waiting for a horn, is what the ACS is trying to build. Not a pilot who reacts to a sound, a pilot who understands the airplane. The day before your check ride, go fly slow flight for 15 minutes. Not to drill it mechanically one more time, just to get comfortable in it. Know what it sounds like in there. Know what the controls feel like. Know where the edge is without touching it. Come back and be able to tell me what airspeed you were flying and whether the horn ever came on. That kind of familiarity, that ease in the maneuver, is worth more than any amount of last-minute ground study. Sources for today include the FAA Airman Certification Standards for Private Pilot and the Airplane Flying Handbook, both available free at faa.gov, more at radiohanger.com. I'm Pattern.